Welcome to episode 2 of the Conversations on Death podcast. My name is Lorena and I'm your host for the Conversations on Death podcast. Death is the one thing we all have in common, yet it's one of the most taboo subjects in our culture. So I invite you, dear deathling, to join my guests and I as we dive deep into everything death related, and in the process, learn about the many lessons death has to teach us, the living. Today's episode is the first episode of my Dance with Death series, which I'm super excited about. This series is going to focus on portraying the accounts of people who went through near-death experiences. This is something I'm super interested in, super passionate about. I think it's definitely worth exploring, and so many people have had so many different types of near-death experiences. And if you have no freaking clue what I'm talking about, it's kind of in the name, but let me break it down for you. Essentially, there are people who die, are pronounced medically dead, and then are brought back to life or just come back on their own, whatever the case may be. But the point is that between that point of death and coming back to life, people usually experience an out-of-body experience. They may see the light at the end of the tunnel, follow the light. They experience a tremendous amount of love and compassion and unity. A lot of people will kind of meet their maker, depending on what their religious views are. Some people see God, some people see Jesus. Some people even encounter loved ones that have already passed. So the differences in accounts of near-death experiences is kind of all over the place. And I think they're really, really fascinating. And so I'm just gonna, you know, invite different people on the show who have had these experiences so that we can learn from the lessons that they learned while going through these. And we'll see what it was like for them to look at death straight in the face. And on today's episode, I talked to David Ditchfield, who in 2006 was dragged under a speeding train in a freak accident, which is insane. And as the surgeons fought to save him, he had a profound near-death experience. After waking up in the hospital and surviving, of course, he discovered some astonishing new abilities. He had the ability to paint far beyond any artistic ability he had in the past, and he had the ability to compose classical music, even though to this day he can't read or write a single note of musical notation. So please join me as I talk to David about his near-death experience. Once again, David, thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest on my podcast. So let's just get started and go ahead and tell us a little bit about what it was like, what your life was like before you had this experience.
Yeah, sure. Well, my life was actually, I would say, it's a complete contrast as to the place I'm in now. I'd hit hard times, to be honest with you, in my life. Basically, I'd left school without any qualifications because I'd been not undiagnosed, actually, with dyslexia. And so I was struggling through all my exams and stuff. So anyhow, I moved down to London, and living in London, just like all capital cities, was a very expensive way to live. And so I was scraping by, picking up work, doing manual labouring mainly. Which was okay, but it was obviously not always consistent. So I think I got to the stage where I was discovering that that wasn't actually what I was cut out for. I wasn't actually very good at manual labouring either. And I just thought, where is my life going? So yeah, it had hit rock bottom at that point. So my sister lived out in the country, out in Cambridge. And she said, why don't you come spend a couple of days with me and the family? She's got a young family. And I said, yeah, that'd be great. So I went up to spend some time with her, really, just to sort of get away from London and just get away from the actual fast pace of life.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was there, I ended up staying for a few weeks. And a friend of mine who I just met in London said, well, I'd like to come and visit you. So she came up and stayed for a few days. So basically what happened was she had to get back to London. So I took her down to the rail station. And when I was helping her onto the train with her bags, I gave her a hug. I heard the emergency doors buzzers going to get off. And as I stepped off, the bottom of my coat got caught in the closing doors. The actual
wow.
automatic doors of the train, yeah. And it was quite a heavy-duty, thick sheepskin. And so it was very hard to tug out. In fact, I couldn't get it out. I tried everything. I really pulled at it. Then I could hear the engines of the train starting to rev up.
Oh, God.
And I figured, wow, I'm stuck here, you know.
Yeah.
So I tried everything. I called out for help, hoping that a guard may step forward, you know, but there was no one else. In fact, there was only one other guy on the platform who was seeing off his girlfriend or whatever also, oh, you know, so, yeah.
What did that feel like? Like desperation, or did you kind of just realize, okay, well, this is going to happen.
A mixture of both, actually, because obviously it was very frightening because right. I knew it wasn't going to come free. And I was going to get pulled along with the train itself. So a part of me was extremely frightened. But another part of me actually was quite calm and collective. And I stopped to think it through
mm-hmm.
and what I was going to do next. I thought, right, I've tried everything. I tried banging on the windows. There were two little buttons either side that, you know, mm-hmm. that you pressed open
yeah.
and close the doors, and they were locked. Mm-hmm. So that was it. So I remember the train started to pull out, you know, and I was looking at my friend through the doors because she watched it all happen, obviously.
Oh, my gosh.
And her face was just filled with fear, you know.
Jesus, yeah.
And so we just saw each other's eyes and then it just pulled off. And I kind of ran along with it at first and then I thought, this is it, you know, I'm probably going to die now.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, I've got one chance. And it was really odd. I don't know why, but I'd seen this news footage a couple of weeks before the accident mm-hmm. where they'd said that a small child, like a young infant, had been thrown from the third floor of a burning apartment block and mm-hmm. that child survived without any broken limbs. You know, they
wow.
caught it, but even so, it had survived. And they put that down to the fact that babies and children are relaxed. They don't tense
yes.
up. Whereas the older we get in life, the more tense up we get,
right.
you know. And,
right. I've heard that about car accidents as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. People who yeah. just kind of, you know, relax like right before. Because if you see it coming, then you tense up and that's when the more damage happens. I've heard that. So sometimes I'm just like going down the road and driving and think like, okay, relax in case you get into a car accident. So I don't know.
Well,
anyway.
well, then I would advise it.
yeah.
So that's exactly what I did. So I just mm-hmm. relaxed and then I lost my footing eventually and got dragged along the platform at great mm-hmm. speed. And then I got pulled between the space of the actual platform edge and the train itself and then went under the wheels
wow.
of the train. So, yeah. And I got pretty much thrown around like a, you know, like a rag doll as
yeah.
it were, bounced from pillar to post. Eventually within that horrible darkness, I suddenly found myself still in the darkness, but lying in between the track. So I was suddenly still, I was stationary, but the train was still frantically going on above my head. You know, it was still sort of racing down the track. And I just figured it's not over yet. I figured some of the undercarriage could just hit me over the back of the head,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't do, thankfully. Otherwise I wouldn't be here to talk now. And then eventually it moved on. And then I just kind of rolled over and looked up at the sky, and it was a beautiful blue February sky. And it was just, I was just like, wow, look at that sky. It just looks amazing because it was just, I just couldn't believe that I was still alive. Yeah.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
I couldn't even imagine. Jesus. Yeah. I mean, what goes through your head? I mean, I've never been in, you know, a situation where I thought I may die, but I imagine all the things that go through your head and then coming out in the other end and you're like, oh my gosh, I actually made it. Like, what? That must be crazy. So what happened? How long would you say was the entire kind of like the train dragging you? Was it like a few seconds?
Yeah.
Did it feel longer or slower?
Exactly. Yeah, it's interesting because the rail police, who are like the National Rail Police in the UK, did a massive inquiry, and they told me afterwards that they were able to measure it through the CCTV footage and then measure the length of the platform. And, mm-hmm. and they said that it took exactly 7.5 seconds from the moment of the train pulling off and me going under. And I was really shocked because it felt more like minutes to me. It felt like it went on a long time. But I saw quite recently, I was watching a program with a scientist from the US who does a lot of research into the brain. And he was talking about this fact that people who face like sort of life-threatening incidents, you know, there was a guy who was a climber and he fell like thousands of feet but survived. Wow. But they interviewed him and it was the same thing that he said that it felt like it took minutes. It wasn't like slow motion, but the brain has all this time to comprehend exactly what's going on. And it's almost like it's a survival technique. You know, so it's time to literally think, right, what am I going to do to save my life? Right. And that's exactly what happened to me.
Wow.
So it's interesting that the brain works like that.
Yeah. Enough time to plan out your actions. Yeah. Survival mechanism makes sense. That's interesting. So then what happened after that, after you lay there looking up at the sky?
well, I looked at my injuries and I was in a pretty bad way. And I don't know why, but I just decided to try and find my cell phone in my pocket to call my sister to let her know what had happened. I guess it was just because I thought no one else had seen me.
She
could alert the call the police, you know, and stuff.
Yeah.
But my phone was no longer working, obviously. But by then, people had arrived pretty quick. The emergency services were there within minutes. And they jumped down onto the track. It's quite a long way down from the edge of the platform when you're lying down there, you know.
Yeah.
But they got down there and they you know, they worked on me and they literally sort of managed to get me onto a stretcher and managed to lift me up and get me into an ambulance and off to the hospital at great speed, you know. So I arrived in the hospital in the emergency department, and when I got there, I remember seeing like this semicircle of people. There were like sort of doctors and consultants and nurses waiting for me, and because they'd been informed that I was coming in. So I got in there, and my family were there pretty soon as well. That was amazing. They were there before I knew it, and so they were kind of there, stood over me, and my mom was like in tears, obviously, and they were all completely distressed, and stuff. And I remember I was apologizing to my mom. I said, "Mom, it's always me causing all these dramas," you know. And she was saying, "Why are you apologizing? You know, it's not your fault, you know." And I said, "I know, but you know, bless her, you know, she was putting her hand over my mouth saying, "Stop, you know." But by that point I was losing a lot of blood, like copious amounts of blood. And it was at that point that I left my body. I left the extreme agony that I was in. I left the streaming lights of the hospital that I was lying in, and then I was in a different place altogether. So I was now in what felt like a really beautiful, calm, warm, dark place, and I just lay there, and all the pain and the agony had gone. Everything had disappeared, and then I looked around me and I could see like these slow pulsating colors, almost like ambers and greens and yellows. And they're like orbs of color, if you like. And they were just pulsating all around me. And then I realized I had a sensation that someone else was with me, and I looked at my feet and I could see this androgynous being, you know, neither male nor female, just stood at my feet with this beautiful sort of glowing skin and pure white blonde hair and like a knowing smile, if you like, on the face. And I felt like I'd known this being for my whole life and beyond, you know. There was just like a connection there straight away. And so, yeah, and I laid my head back and I figured this is it, you know. I've died. This is the next stage. But I was quite happy with it. I didn't have any sort of fear or not wanting to be there. And when I laid back, I laid back and I was on this huge kind of rock, and it was like a big slate rock, and it was like it was like an altar. But it was felt really, really comfortable to lie on. And so I laid back onto this rock, and then I looked up, and there were like these three grids of white light suddenly started to appear above me. And as I looked into that white light, I could see all this energy of light that was just going into my eyes, and was I felt like it was healing me. The light was so pure that normally I wouldn't be able to look into it, you know, electric light or sunlight, it would be too much. But this wasn't. And in fact, I couldn't take my gaze away from it. And so, yeah, and as I lay there, I thought I better check out my wounds, my body, and have a look. And because at that point, I know that my left arm had been severed from the elbow down. And I'd seen that, and so I looked up and I looked down at my body, and everything was intact, and that my whole body was fixed, and I was covered in like this blue sort of cloth, almost like a sort of satin sheet or a silk texture sheet that was keeping me cool and calm. And then as I lay my head back again, I suddenly realized that there are two other beings either side of me, and there were one of them was like sort of Asian or American Indian sort of look about her, and the other one was more like a sort of white Caucasian sort of girl with sort of brown hair, and they were like healing me. Their hands sort of going over my body and just kind of, you know, sort of almost like a Reiki form of healing, if you like. And I was feeling this energy coming through their hands. And this energy was almost like an energy like a sensation of love, didn't it? But it was kind of all the sensations of love you probably had in your life, whether it's being through your mother or your father or your lover or your even your pet cat or whatever, you know. It was all those different textures of love were just coming through. It was really wonderful.
So did they say anything or try to communicate with you in any way, or it was just them kind of fixing you up?
There was communication coming from the initial being, but it wasn't through the power of speech. It was more like telepathy. And the telepathy was just telling me that I'm safe, that I'm being cared for, and everything's okay. But I also had this feeling that I was being prepared for something else, and I didn't know what that was. You know, it felt like I was, you know, going onto somewhere else, the next place. But
you mean like after death, or you mean like?
Well, I don't know. What I mean is almost like in that, you know, say for example, if you'd been brought into a hospital and you were being prepared to go into an operating theater, for example, it felt like that. Like I thought, why are they working on me? They're doing something here to sort of get me ready.
Okay,
and that's how it felt, you know. Then I suddenly started worrying about my family, because I knew, as I say, my mother and the whole family were distressed over there. My family members had turned up. So I started worrying about them. Well, I didn't worry about them, actually, because the interesting thing is, in that place that I was, all my feelings of guilt and worry and anguish had gone, they'd all been diminished, and I just didn't feel a sense of like worry and a sort of, oh gosh, I hope they're okay. It wasn't like that. It was more just a genuine care from the heart. And so I just thought I'd look over my left shoulder over the side of this big rock, and I thought I might be able to see them down in the hospital. So I did look, but I couldn't see them. So I couldn't see them as I gazed down at all. But what I did see was this amazing sight, which is like a beautiful, like a huge waterfall of stars that was cascading around in a massive arc.
Wow.
And the stars were just like beautifully falling and dropping down into other galaxies. And as I looked, I could see it was going further and further into different colors of an abyss of stars and galaxies, other universes almost. Yeah, it was just
so
really
beautiful. Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Were you mind blown to see that, or did you just kind of understand that was just the universe? You know what I mean? Like an inner understanding that's normal. Or as opposed to when we're in our bodies now, we're like, what? That makes no sense. You know, we try to explain everything.
Yeah, that's really well put, because I was awestruck because it was just so beautiful and it was so amazing. But another part of me was in acceptance that, okay, well, this is part of the place I'm in now. This is it. This is all part of death. This is all pretty amazing, you know, and this is where we go to, and that's okay. Because, but one thing it did make me realize was that I wasn't in a small, darkened space that I initially thought I was. I actually figured, no, I'm in the universe itself. I'm part of this universe. I'm there floating around in the inner. And so I realized then that it was a huge area of space that I was part of. So as I eventually took my gaze away from this beautiful sight, I turned back over and I was feeling a sense of an energy that was drawing in closer to me. And that energy was like an energy of like a huge white tunnel of light. And that tunnel of white light was just sending out so much power that I thought, wow, what is this? And the white light as well was like surrounded by this kind of swirl of flames, but they weren't frightening. They were beautiful to watch. They were like slowly sort of just rotating around in yellows and oranges and reds. And this massive sort of tunnel was just getting closer and closer to me. And the closer it got, the more the energy I could sense from it. And again, there was a lot of telepathy going on here, because I suddenly realized that what I was looking at was God. This was the creation of all, you know, of all mankind or what have you. It was just, this is our creator, and it's there. I'm looking straight at it. I'm not looking at an image of God, whatever our faith may be that we pray to. This is like, you know, it's a huge energy of light.
So before you had this experience, what were your thoughts about life after death? Did you believe in a higher power? Did you believe that, you know, we reincarnate? Did you have any beliefs? And if so, when you were there, were you like, oh shit, I was wrong? Or
Well, no, I didn't do, actually. I didn't really think about death at all before. And I didn't really think about religion. I wasn't atheist, but sort of religion hadn't really sort of come into my life that much at all. You know, I was trying to basically get myself through day by day, just trying to fix myself in best ways possible, you know. So it was all very much a whole complete turnaround for me, because I didn't kind of go, I didn't doubt it for one minute. This is it. This is the creator that we all talk about, that people pray to. This is it. But it's interesting now that I realized looking back that I wasn't the only one that I realize now the majority of people don't really think about death or talk about it. You know, it's a taboo subject.
Yes.
And to me now that seems kind of crazy because it's like, it's going to happen to us all at some point. We don't need to talk about it every day. But you know, we may as well just chat about it and think about it at least, because you know, there's no avoiding it for any of us.
Absolutely. So, yeah. The whole point of this podcast, and it needs to be talked about, and it's so feared, I think, precisely because it's just not talked about enough. It's a big question mark for everybody. And regardless, I mean, it's going to continue being a question mark until we die. But, you know, meanwhile, we can talk about it and get to know different stories, such as yours.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's going to make it a lot less frightening,
right?
For the likes of you and I who are discussing it and trying to look at it, you know, because it's, no, it's absolutely true. Because you know, I've since my NDE, I know that certain friends of mine have lost various parents or what have you, a few of them, when they talk about it, obviously we chat by phone or what have you and stuff like that. I say, oh, how's your dad doing, or your mum or whatever, you know? And I say, oh, he's really scared. He's scared because he knows he's going to die, and, you know, but he's really scared. He's hanging on. And it's just like, well, if only I could talk to him. But, you know, there's never always that moment to be able to do that. And with everyone, you know, but I wish that would be the case. I mean, funnily enough, I got invited to go and do a talk in France last year, in the south of France, and it was like a retreat, and all the women who were on that retreat were all end of life doulas, and they're like soul midwives, and I'd never even heard of them before, but they were fantastic, and just chatting to them was brilliant, and the work they do, because they work with people who are and helping them. And I thought soul midwives is such a brilliant phrase, because it's like we have midwives, well, in the UK anyway. I don't know if that's a phrase you use in the US at all, but you know, we have midwives to help babies to be born into the world. So why not have them to do, you know, because life is literally a cycle for us, you know, it goes full circle. And so, so I'm realizing that there are people out there who are actually helping and talking to people and helping them to with their journey. And I think it should be something that's just part of our everyday life, that we all know we're going to get that, that we're going to get that comfort and reassurance and that help.
Right. So, and also, because we're not talking about it, we're not planning for it either. So when it happens, it's a mess. For the family left behind, for the friends. And I know that's what a lot of death doulas, I guess they're called death doulas here, but different names for it. Yeah, they take care of that as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's beautiful work and much needed.
Mm.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more then, what happened after you saw this bright light.
Well, at that point, I think that it's almost like I gained the information that I needed to gain from it all. And I figure anyway, that's because they decided at that point to send me back. Mm. And so I suddenly came crashing back to Earth.
You decided or they decided?
I don't know. Yes, I don't know whether I decided or whether they decided. Mm. Exactly. It's all the same. But it's hard to figure that one out. But I don't really try to try and figure it out, in all fairness. I just know that at that point I was sent back. And because what I have realized is that I've never left that place. There's a part of me that's still there, that was very much attached to it, and that I continue to connect through what I call my guides, my spirit guides. I channel a lot of stuff through, and so I know I'm still being helped to understand a lot of what happened there and why I survived and why I came back and what my life's journey is from that. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I definitely want to get into that in a bit. But what was it like reentering your body, mentally, physically? How did everything feel?
Well, initially, obviously, it was a bit of a shock because all the pain came rushing back, and all the bright lights that I was now looking at were like, I couldn't stare into them, and they were just blinding my eyes. So it was just like sort of all the senses were on overkill. And I just couldn't handle it all. And so it was a bit like that initially. But it was interesting because I was so charged with excitement as to what I'd just been through that I wasn't kind of going, oh no, what am I doing back here? It was more like, I've got to tell the world, I've got to tell everybody about this, you know. And in fact, my friend Anna, who I've been seeing off on the train, she was there. The police had managed to get her back to the station in time just before I went to the operating theatre. And she came over to me because I really wanted to see her. And because we'd just been through like something so intense together, like her watching me die. And I was really scared for her and how she was coping with what just happened. And so she came over and we just spoke briefly. And she was just shaking her head. She was just going, I can't believe, you know, you're alive. She said, I watched you go under, you know. I said, look, I've got to tell you something. Something really important has just happened. And she was going, she put her hand over her mouth also. She said, "That, not now. Tell me later. You can tell me later, you know." I said, no, I've got to tell you now. It was like, that's how excited I was.
Right.
You know? They took me straight into an operating theatre. And I was there for, the first one was about 7.5 hours under.
Wow.
And then, so when I came through, obviously I was knocked about from the anaesthetic. But I remember I was just in this room on my own. They'd given me my own room in the hospital, and which was great because I got that lovely solitude. But it was all a bit surreal because at that point I was dealing with – part of me was dealing with the actual realness of what had just happened, you know, that I just looked death in the eyes and that I'd survived it, and then the horror of the actual accident. But so, you know, any – person going through that would be in shock, you know. So there's part of me was dealing with that, but it was more overwhelmed by this complete sense of like energy that was still charging through every part of my body, that I was just so keyed up, and just I thought, I've got to tell, how am I gonna, why am I back here, what's my my mission, what do I do, how do I tell the whole world about, because I didn't know anything about near-death experiences at that point. You know, I thought I was the only one at that stage.
Yeah.
You know, so I thought, how do I tell everybody without them thinking I've lost the plot? So
so when once you got better, how did your friends react? How did Hannah, right?
Anna
react once you did tell her what happened, and your friends and family?
When I told Anna, she was like, she was like completely captivated by the whole thing when I told her. And she said, the funny thing is, she said to me when I was talking about that thing earlier about relaxing myself, she said, you know what's really strange? She said, I ran through the carriage to watch, to check you're okay. And she said, I saw you go under. She said, and I hope you don't think this is a strange thing to say, but you rolled under so gracefully. And so
it worked.
It worked. But I also thought there was a part of me that I knew that I was being, something was helping me being to be saved. Do you know what I mean? Something was stopping me from going under in a really ugly manner, if you like. It was just something was kind of helping me to sort of really just go under quite and survive it. But I told her, and I told my sister, I remember, about it, and she was really, really drawn in by the whole thing. It took me a week to tell my parents because my parents are Christian, you know, and they go to church. And I thought, well, I don't know if this is going to like sort of like how they're going to deal with it with their faith, because anyone who's got a faith is like, you know, it's normally pretty rigid. That's what you believe in. And I didn't know whether that was going to come in into clash with their beliefs. So I started telling my parents about it. And then my mom just turned around afterwards and she said, we know. And I said, you know? How do you know? And she said, well, she said, because every time we come in here and see you, you're glowing. You just have got this glow all around you, and you've just got this positive, calming energy that you're wow. radiating out to everyone, the nurses and doctors and whoever, you know. So there was, yeah, so that was interesting that my wow. mum, it was like that she knew. And so, yeah.
So they accepted so it. She, they didn't think it was strange.
No, they accepted it, and they have done right up until now. You know, they've obviously seen me, you know, do paintings and write music and have concert performances and stuff, and so they've been along me all the way, and so they've never really questioned it at all. So yeah, for it's just as much a part of their life as mine.
Right,
yeah. So,
yeah. Right. You kind of have a physical confirmation of the gifts that you brought back. So let's talk a little bit about that, since you just mentioned some of them.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, it started off by the very first night my sister came in to see me. Mm-hmm. She said, "Is there anything I can get you?" And I said, "Yeah. Can you get me a small sketch pad and a pencil? Because I wanted to sketch what I'd just seen." Mm. And I hadn't actually told her the story at that point because it was the very first night. And she went, "Okay." So she brought that in, and so I did. I got the nurses to prop me up in bed, and I did this very fine. I still got the sketch; you can barely see it. And it was the sketch of the very first painting that I was going to do. So in my mind, I just wanted to. Once I was well enough, I wanted to do like a big Renaissance style painting of what I'd seen, because I wanted to, record it to everyone. So that's what I did, and then. From that painting onwards, I did a huge canvas, and I was really prolific. I just kept painting more and more, so I moved on to painting. Mm-hmm. pretty much all about my experience and how I felt about it all.
And then I just want to ask, yeah. Did you paint before this, or is it kind of
no.
a new talent that you had to get it out?
Yeah, I mean, as a child, I'd always enjoyed sketching and what have you. But because of my lack of education and failing most of the subjects, I didn't follow through any sort of, anything in my life that was going to take me towards being doing the kind of things I was doing at this stage. So these are like, you can just see one behind me there, actually. That's one of them. And they're just, when I was doing those paintings, I felt like I was being helped. I knew that I was being channeling ideas, that I was channeling ideas, I should say, sorry, to help me paint those paintings. You know, I'd step back and I go, wow, I was just kind of, is that me? Have I just done that? You know, it was just remarkable. So, I would sit back and I'd sit on a chair and go, oh, thank you. Just thank whoever's helping me. This is amazing.
So it was something like, that came through you and expressed itself on the canvas. It wasn't you intentionally trying to connect. You're already connected.
I wasn't intentionally. I wasn't saying, I'm going to sit here now and I'm going to go into a meditation and connect. Mm-hmm. It's nothing like that at all. It's literally me sat there and bravely putting a big canvas in front of myself, getting some paints and off I go. And, it was as simple as that. And, each painting was inspired. The ideas behind each painting was like inspired a feel from spirit, So,
Wow.
So it was very important. I mean, it was great because it was also, as I say, I still had to process the physical aspects and mental aspects of what had happened to me. So it was very, great from that point of view as well to help me process what had happened.
Right. So, after that, you started kind of working on music, and that's the most fascinating part to me, because from what I understand, you didn't have any knowledge or kind of background in music.
I played three chord wonder songs, in sort of rock and roll punk bands or whatever, and that was it, so I was, just throwing out that kind of stuff, but so I was enjoying myself, but never making any money out of it. And I got no classical training whatsoever. And to this day, I can't actually read any notation, you know, sort of sheet music. Mm-hmm. So, but I still managed to be able to write. Well, it all started. I basically, I'd been going for some spiritual healing, which I'd heard about after my accident. And when I was having that spiritual healing, some of the healers, like mediums, and they'd get little messages through, you know, afterwards. And they would tell you at the end sometimes, they say, oh, I was picking up, you know, that you're blah, blah, blah. The only short ones. And I started getting these messages through saying, of a few of them, not just off one, where they say, picking up a violin I laid across your chest. Why is that? I was going, wow. No idea, you know.
Right.
You know, I'm picking it. I know, yeah. Then one of them said one week, they're telling me that you're going to write some music about your experience. And I went, ah, okay, great. So I went home. I couldn't play guitar anymore because of the injury to my arm. But I had this old cheap synthesizer in the bottom of my wardrobe or whatever, and so I pulled that out and started playing around on that. And I thought I was going to write like a 3-minute pop song or whatever,
right?
Because that's all I knew of.
Right.
And that wasn't coming. That wasn't to be the case. But one day these chords came through, these lovely progressions of chords. And I thought, that's nice. So I recorded it on a tape machine. I just had a tape, a cassette tape recorder, believe it or not. And I just put it down on that. And went, made a coffee, came back in, played it back, and I thought, I like that. That's really cool. And so I just kept developing it up. And I thought, this sounds like it could be played by an orchestra. So when I was doing the paintings, I got to know a cellist, and she was playing cello in the local orchestra. And she'd already asked me if she could use one of my paintings for a poster for the concert. I said, yeah. So we used to go have coffee together and chat, and I told her, she said, what have you been up to? So I told her about this piece of music that I was writing, you know, and I said, I feel like it should be played by orchestra. She said, well, maybe we could do it, you know, and I thought, ah, I'm going to hold you to that. So my brother gave me this app, which I was able to play the part that I got in my head on the keyboard, and then it would take that composition and turn it into notation so that I could then print it off as sheet music for the individual instruments of the orchestra. So I took it along to my friend, the cellist, and one of the leaders of the orchestra, and said, what do you think? And they looked at it and they said, yeah, this looks good. We'll do it. So they agreed to perform it. And the concert sold out 2 weeks in advance, which was amazing, because they said, oh, look, we do local press. Are you okay to say a few words to them? I said, yeah, sure. So when I told them what it was about, and they'd remembered me from going under the train. They said, oh, you're the guy who went under the train. And so they said, that's amazing. So it started to pick up a lot of sort of press. And then the BBC got on board and they wanted to come along and film me and stuff. So, that I felt again like I was being helped. The place I've just been to is still with me, and they're driving this. It wasn't just down to me, sort of like trying to, you know, hustle, because I didn't hustle at all. I just kind of let it happen, let it all fall.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's what I was dying to ask you, whether you still feel connected and you feel like whatever energy you encountered is still part of your life and kind of not necessarily driving your actions, but in a way guiding you.
Yeah, it's
to what's
absolutely
next.
It's most certainly a big part of me. Very much at the moment, actually, because I've got a book coming out in June, and that the energy behind that, again, it feels a bit like that concert. It feels like, you know, there's certain things that are starting to sort of come together in terms of promotion, which is obviously important for a book. And this is a first venture for me as well, because as I'm dyslexic, as I said earlier. So
In terms of writing the book, did you also feel the same kind of energy guiding you that you felt when, you know, you composed your music or you painted your paintings when it came to writing the book? Or was it more technical, like, okay, this is my story and what happened?
Well, I had to work with a ghostwriter because obviously being dyslexic, there's no way I could have written a book myself. And it's something that I'd wanted to do all along. But it again, it was like the stars were all aligned for that to happen. It was a friend that I'd known for years who just kind of came back into my life. And we just kind of met up and we got chatting by phone. And she knew all about my accidents and then the music, and we got talking. And we just kind of just fell into this conversation where we said, oh, why don't you, you know, she was going, you should write your story. I said, yeah, but you know me, I can't even read a whole book, you know, she said. And so we came to this conclusion that she could ghostwrite it, which was fantastic. So so as all the interviews that she did with me, it was just, I could feel that sensation that it was all, you know, I was being channeled to make sure that everything that was meant to go in the book did. And that she was really excited by what was happening. You know, she wasn't just like taking down notes and transforming it into, you know, she was going, wow, this is incredible. She was really enjoying the journey. As much as I was. So that makes for anything good, because, you know, it's like anything in life. If you don't enjoy it, it's just not going to work, is it? You know,
it's about the energy behind it. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. And that's coming out June 26th, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
June 26th. Okay. Yeah. And it's called Shine On.
It's called
On.
Shine On. Yeah. Shine On. Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So what do you think, what did you learn from this experience you had? What are the messages you think that experience brought on that you need to share with the world?
Well, there's a few. The first one is not to fear death. You know, that it's a beautiful place that awaits us all, and that the soul lives on. You know, to me, the soul doesn't suddenly switch off like a light. Yes, you know, our bodies do, and our bodies will ultimately decay, but the soul continues and it goes on to a really, really great place. But for now, for the here and now, it's like, you know, I learned self-love, you know, from all that unconditional love I was getting up there. And that learning that self-love was something I'd never had before. I didn't realize it. I didn't realize that I wasn't loving myself at all. And once I learned that, I realized that I was able to function a lot better in the world. You know, I was able to give love to others, but also that I was able to be at peace with my journey and enjoy it and be authentic to it. So, but another thing that I would just say to everyone, especially now, because everything that's happening with the world, you know, with the whole COVID situation, is that it's, I can almost equate it to a near-death experience. Okay, I know there's a lot of fear and panic, which is understandable, and it's awful that we're losing people, and that is terrible. But it's out of all adversity comes, you know, some great new changes. And I think this is a moment that we really got to try and not focus on, that's the wrong word, but just to really appreciate that it's a golden moment for us to stop and get in touch with our authentic selves, our higher consciousness, if you like, because that, you know, the whole world's literally just stopped turning. You know what I mean? The whole speed that it was going at was just spinning out of control. And we've been given a chance to say, okay, return to your homes. Okay, you're self-isolating, but enjoy it. And then just get in touch with your guides like I do. You know, I talk to them every day. I'm aware that they're there. And we've all got guides. We don't have to have an accident or a near-death experience to be able to get in touch with those guides.
Right.
So,
Yeah, this moment is just kind of like the whole world went on pause, and this is a time to reconnect. I mean, get rid of all the noise.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful. So before I let you go, there are two questions that I like to ask my guests. One of them, I think we've kind of covered, but regardless, I'm going to ask you anyway.
Sure.
So the first one is, if you were to die again tomorrow, how would you like to be remembered?
Oh, well, yeah, I guess I'd like to be remembered by people who've known me all my life to see how it's possible to literally learn how to stop and love yourself and stop beating yourself up and feeling inferior and suddenly feeling inner strength from finding self-worth and self-love. I guess that's probably about it. You know, it's just, it really is that, because most people who do know me, who are close to me, can see that. They can see the transformation that I've made. You know, they were at odds had to help me before. You know, they could see that I was on the road to self-destruct, and now they just think it's amazing that I've managed to turn my life around. But it's only because I've learned to love myself.
Wow.
It's as simple as that. Yeah,
it's beautiful. And the second question is, if you could synthesize the wisdom and knowledge gained throughout your life into a short little message, what would that message be?
Oh, trust in your soul, trust in the authentic you, you know, trust in what is really you. Don't try to look for, try not to follow the ego, as it were, you know, try not to, to look for things that you aspire to, that you want to be, you know, because inside is the real you. And it's the again, it's that the get in touch with the higher state of consciousness, because it's within us all. And that higher state of consciousness is the answer. It really is. Wow. to a successful, fulfilling life anyway.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely agree. Yeah. Thank you so much, David. This was absolutely fascinating for me, and I'm sure also my listeners. How can people find you and find out about your book coming out soon? Where can they find you on social media?
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yeah. Well, the best thing is to go to my website, really, because all the links are on there for the music and the art and my Facebook page, if you want to follow me on that to keep up with things. So that's it's shineonthestory.com. So that's basically it. So you'll find that if you go on there. And then if people are interested in the book, and it's you can pre-order it now on Amazon. So it's available in the US as well as over here in the UK or whatever. So yeah, just you should be able to pre-order it if you're interested. But I mean, have a look first, you know, just have a look at all the other stuff. And forgive me for selling my book, but it's only because I really want people to
No, you this know, get, is something it, that needs
get
to more, be
get right into the story, you know.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a beautiful experience you went through and a beautiful message that you have to share with the world. So thank you so much again for sharing that with us. Hope you guys enjoyed today's podcast. If you did, please make sure to subscribe. And if you'd like, leave a review on iTunes or wherever you consume your podcasts. It really helps spread the message. Also, if you'd like to connect with me, follow me on Instagram @conversationsondeath. And I will talk to you guys soon. Take care.